You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we break the fourth wall by directly addressing Drew.
Hi, Drew.
Hi, Drew.
Joining me this week via Skype from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Now, Daniel, I know we have a lot of news to talk about coming out of where you are this week, so we'll get to that in a second. But before we do, I just want to ask you about something because I'm not really sure what to make of it. Do you have any thoughts on the Peyton Manning news that has come out over the past, I think it came over the weekend or on Friday?
Oh, yeah, the Peyton Manning news, the court document that shows that he was involved in a, well, what they're calling a sexual assault, which is he put his naked testicles and rear end on a trainer's face.
Allegedly.
And then lied about it. But she did, there was a settlement with her and the university. And then apparently in his book, his biography with his dad, he lied about her, the same trainer, and said she was basically a slut sleeping with all these black guys.
Because it's so much worse if they're black.
I know, apparently. And she sued him for defamation, and there was also a settlement in that lawsuit as well. No, we don't know the exact details of any of this. Look, there's a couple things about this. One, okay, I'm sure that, especially when you're in college, I'm sure Peyton Manning as an athlete was not the squeaky clean Peyton Manning he is today. He probably made some very terrible mistakes. The lying about it later is certainly troubling if that's true.
Yeah, like you probably used HGH or something in college.
Now. The only thing about this story that makes me question it and its validity at all, well, there are two things. One, it's in the New York Daily News, which is, oh my God, it's the epitome of shithole in terms of news, and it's written by one Sean King. Are you familiar with Sean King?
Do you mean the former NFL quarterback Sean King?
I wish I did. So much more validity. No, Sean King is one of the leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement. He's a very vocal social justice advocate.
Right, and one of the undercurrents of him writing the piece was, oh, we treat Cam Newton like shit in the media. Why don't we do the same thing to Peyton Manning?
Yeah, exactly. Does he bring up things that are troubling about Peyton Manning's character? I think so. And if you read just some of the revealed court documents, it's in that, if not in his writing. Is it something I think we need to get incredibly worked up over? Probably not. Was Peyton Manning probably, you know, likely more or less generally aware that he was being a douchebag to this girl? Yes. So I don't know what to make of it other than Peyton Manning was not the golden boy the media made him out to be, but we didn't believe that in the first place. So
right. We did not believe it here in the midside. And I think that's the thing that makes me not really care about this story, because it's sort of like everyone's like, oh, wait, Peyton Manning crafted an image of being the golden boy in Captain America, which, by the way, Captain America crafts an image of being Captain America. Don't we see this with Captain America versus Iron Man? Not to always compare everything to the same things, but that's what I do. And to me, it's surprising just that the media, it's not surprising, but it is surprising at the same time, that the media is not covering this because, as you've alluded to several times here, there's more evidence that Peyton Manning did something here than there is the Tom Brady deflated footballs.
Yeah, there are actual court documents here with transcripts of testimony, and there's way more evidence here to suggest that Peyton Manning put his naked testicles and buttocks in the face of a trainer and then lied about it later than there is that Tom Brady was generally aware about air.
Yeah, but fortunately for Peyton Manning, there was much bigger news this week, so we'll get to that later. But first, also joining us via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. Elliot, I usually give you a lot of crap about your shows, but I have to tip my hat to you, because for the past 2 weeks, Arrow has actually been pretty good. They might have been the best two episodes of the entire series.
I mean, I've really enjoyed them. They've been really tense to watch, and I think I texted you after the end of the last one, because my jaw still has not fully come back up from the floor from the very end of the last episode, because, man, if you didn't hate the certain character by now you certainly did when you saw that episode. I think it's like what we talked about, you know, the first half of the season was just a clunky build up towards Legends of Tomorrow. And now that Legends of Tomorrow is kind of up and running, they can go back to focusing on the actual show and the actual story and developing the themes. And I think that now we're probably going to start seeing, we already have started seeing a marked improvement in how they're developing their story.
Yeah, one of the things I've always had a problem with Arrow is there wasn't a lot of thematic integration in the show. But the last episode, I believe it was called Sins of the Father. Is that what it was called? Yeah. And it was all about Felicity's father and Oliver's father and Thea's father and how that influenced all... And even Nessa's father to a certain extent too, right? Ra's al Ghul. So all the characters were dealing with the same issue. And I was like, wow, this is actually how you write an episode of television. Somebody figured it out. So hopefully that continues. Any further thoughts on that?
I asked you the other day, if you go back and watch those scenes in the graveyard, the foreshadowing that they did in the season premiere, I can't offhand remember if they actually mentioned Damien Dark.
Oh, yeah.
I have a theory now that perhaps that's not to whom he's referring. But in fact, he might actually be referring to Malcolm Merlyn, which might give you a hint as to who I think might actually be in the grave.
Yeah, but as I said, I think the only way the series can end is with Oliver killing Malcolm Merlyn. I can't think of any other acceptable end to the series, so I would not want to see them go in that direction.
Well, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. It's exciting.
But speaking of death and tragedy and sadness... A news story broke, I think it was Saturday morning, that had all of those elements. That's what we're going to talk about next in The News with Daniel T. Richards.
The nation lost one of its premier jurists, a great intellectual mind, and truly a historic figure, a living historical figure, when Justice Antonin Scalia passed away this weekend at the age of 79 at a resort in West Texas. The cause of death was simply natural causes, although the conspiracy theories are already whirling around his death. Antonin Scalia... It's hard to actually express. I was showing a bit of frustration this week with people on the internet. It's actually hard to stress how important Antonin Scalia was. I mean, he's going to be remembered in the history books in the same breath as John Jay or Marshall or Judge Learned Hand as one of the most extraordinary legal minds in history. I mean, none of us were alive in the 70s, but in terms of judicial history in the 70s, there was no such thing as originalism or textualism or thinking about what a statute meant. Basically, what you did with the law was figure out a way to make it say whatever you wanted it to say so that you could pass whatever piece of horrifying legislation you wanted to justify. And this had been going on since FDR, since the Supreme Court basically validated all the horrible nonsense progressive programs that FDR put in place. And it was Scalia almost single-handedly, along with the work of the Federalist Society, that got people thinking and got judges thinking that they have to actually ground their decision in the text of a law or in the text of the Constitution or in the meaning of the Constitution in some way. So This is a huge blow for, well, everyone. Mostly, though, people who want to at least in some way check the growth of the state. But, yeah, I don't know. Sad weekend. Although, to bring a bit of levity to it, certainly someone, if you'd been putting together a celebrity death pool, might have been up in there.
You can say Deadpool. This is the Deadpool edition.
That's right, a celebrity Deadpool. Would have been up there because 79, Italian.
Hey,
so,
hey,
loved the pasta.
Okay.
Loved to drink, loved to smoke, loved life in general. He was such a cordial, happy guy. Witty, funny, profound. Just loved life so much. He had 9 children and like a gaggle of grandchildren.
Well, it's probably because he's Catholic, right? So he doesn't believe in birth control.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, he said, I'm Catholic, so I believe that when God gives you children, you have them and you raise them. I think he said once. So that meant 9. So not a total surprise at 79 that he would go, but as one of our favorites here, RJD on Facebook said, man, what shit timing. It's bad time to die, Justice Scalia. This puts the election in a brand new light. Something that people, no one was talking about, which is the Supreme Court appointments, is now going to be the number one issue going into the nominating period and into the election. Because, again, Scalia, 79, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, 80, a couple other justices about to be 80.
That's what I was going to say. She's going to be pretty high on the Deadpool too, right?
Yeah. I mean, the next president, I mean, hell, this president has an opportunity to appoint someone if that's going to happen. But the next president, if this seat isn't filled, could fill 4 vacancies on the court. That's just incredible.
All right, I gotta ask. I was gonna wait till I hijacked this story, but since we're already there, who do you think Donald Trump would put on the Supreme Court? Can you imagine?
His sister.
He has said he likes his sister. She is a, I think, an appellate court judge. Maybe I'm wrong about that. She is.
I thought you were fucking joking. I thought you were joking.
No. Nope, no. That's a real thing that he said. I always thought it would be great if he was like, introducing new Supreme Court Justice Judy, as in Judge Judy.
You know what? I would actually vote for him if he said that.
I would watch that show, by the way. Justice Judy. so funny.
And who was the other guy who was the boxing ref? Judge Mills Lane?
Oh.
Judge Wapner?
My name is Judge. Where's that from? Arrested Development, you're terrible.
And then, who's the guy who, Beverly Hills Cop? His first name is Judge.
Judge Reinhold?
Yeah. Let's put Judge Reinhold.
That's the reference in Arrested Development. Oh. They do a show with Judge Reinhold, and he keeps wanting to just call the show Reinhold, but it's a court show. It's like, you don't get it. It's because your name is Judge. And he won't let it sink in.
Let's do it. I'm now in favor of Trump for president as long as he nominates these people.
Yes. I do want to take a moment, just like 2 more minutes, to talk about why I think Scalia was so important, and primarily because I see a lot of objectivists specifically on Facebook this week going, well, he wasn't that great of a judge, but you know, this will throw up the balance of the court. One, go fuck yourselves. Who could realistically be appointed to the court who would do a better job at protecting our freedoms than Scalia?
Justice Roberts was supposed to, right?
Yeah, but I don't think that was horrifying.
My point is just the unpredictability of the judge you appoint. You don't ever know really what's going to happen when you appoint someone.
You don't, but it's one of these sort of reasons I get mad at objectivists for being platonic about some things. It's like, you want some imaginary jurist who's going to basically uphold all the things you think are rights and constitutional, but who could never be appointed and who's never going to get confirmed. So.
Yeah, nominate me.
Exactly. Let's start a petition to get Tara Smith on the Supreme Court. Not going to fucking happen. It's not even marginally feasible.
Yeah, she's gay.
To think that way. Yeah, that's what's going to stop her. That's a plus in her favor at this point with Obama.
Yes.
But it's just not going to happen. Look, Scalia wanted to ground all of his decisions in what was the purpose of this legal document? I mean, he basically said, look, the Constitution is a legal document and it says what it says and it doesn't say what it doesn't say. And you may not like some of the things, like you may not like that they didn't outline a certain freedom or a certain right, but that's not what I'm here to do. I'm not here to give you freedoms and rights. My job is to decide what does this legal document say? And sometimes that had a bad outcome for freedom. It did. But most of the time, it stopped huge, huge sweeping power grabs of the government. And the other element of why he was so important is that Scalia understood that everyone should have access to the law. His opinions can be read by people with a marginal intelligence of legal jargon or apparatus. He wrote for a broad audience. He wrote opinions that were funny and interesting and engaging, and that you could actually look at them and say, I understand what he's getting at here. None of the other justices do that. So, I don't know. Subjectives out there, okay, don't fuck yourselves. Just reconsider your position, okay? Okay?
Well, okay. I think it's just everyone for some perspective, because the reason I reacted like I did, and I was sort of numb to all of this at first, and I was like, oh, we're going to have to talk about this in the podcast, is because I don't think people were differentiating between mourning the man and flipping out over the politics of it. And what I mean by this is I'm going to connect this to Tom Brady, of course.
What?
And when Tom Brady retires, I am going to be sad that Tom Brady retires, because then Tom Brady no longer gets to play football. I no longer get to witness that, all the great things he did. But I'm not going to flip out and be like, oh my God, this is the end of the Patriots. This is the end of the NFL. Like, what's going to happen? I don't know. Is there a plan in place? What's Kraft going to do? What's Belichick going to do? Blah, blah, blah. Because that's the way the system works, and that's what happens. And I don't think people were focused enough on saying, hey, this guy was awesome. He did great things. It sucks he's gone. I hope it works out now that he's gone, but I'm not going to worry about prognosticating what happens 6 months, 1 year, 5 years, a century down the line. It's like immediately now, everything, nothing is immediate anymore. Immediately, nothing is immediate. It's, we don't deal with emotions anymore. We don't deal with, hey, this is what's happening. We deal with what are the implications. What snarky thing can I say? What way can I demonstrate my brilliance?
That's true. There's a lot of truth to that, and I appreciate that thinking about it. The analogy would be closer if, let's say, the Patriots were in their playoff bye week. They got into the playoffs with a bye, and Tom Brady was hit by a car and killed. And the question would be, well, what the fuck are the Patriots going to do now? Can they even make it? Like, is it going to even be possible for them to do it?
To be fair, that's kind of what happened to our offensive line this year. So
that's true, but that would be a little closer. And then you take that on a scale of national history, and someone who is as influential to the law as Tom Brady has been to football.
Tom Brady is on a scale of national history.
Okay. You're right.
He did change the law with Deflategate.
Those two paths have crossed almost. Yes, very close. There's one thing. I was going to read a bit from a Scalia opinion, but it's long, so I won't do it. Instead, I'll just read a quote from the New York Times obituary where he was talking about essentially, you know, something can have a good outcome or an outcome that you think is positive, but it can still be bad because the way you got there was bad, which is a lot of what his arguments were. Like he would say, for instance, like, you may agree with the Roe v. Wade outcome, with what it gave, but the reasoning is so poor in the Roe v. Wade decision that it's going to lead to other horrible things that you're not going to like.
Well, yeah, Roe v. Wade invented shit, didn't it?
Yeah, it just outright invented things that aren't in the Constitution. And right. He said, look, if you want abortion to be legal, pass laws that says abortion is legal. He said this all the time. And maybe it is a right, but we can... what did he say? Basically, reasonable people can have a disagreement about that, but what you have in Roe v. Wade is such shitty reasoning that you're just going to create horrible things down the road. So this was a quote when talking about that kind of situation. He says, Hitler developed a wonderful automobile. What does that prove? I'll stipulate that you can reach some results you like with the other system, but that's not the test. The test is over the long run. Does it require the society to adhere to those principles contained in the Constitution, or does it lead to a society that is essentially governed by nine justices' version of what equal protection ought to mean? And that was his governing philosophy. And I think even objectivists who disagree with some of the outcomes of his decisions have to respect that. You have to respect that.
Well, even if you disagree with his logic and you say that he didn't do that properly all the time, at least he was trying to fucking do that. Like, he had the right standard, even if I'm not, you know, I'm not an expert. I'm just saying maybe people think he didn't apply it right sometimes.
Yeah,
and maybe he didn't, but he still was fucking trying.
Yes.
And it's funny how a lot of people, particularly on the right, who are penning pieces mourning this man, when I distinctly remember them really laying into him on a whole host of different issues. So I am, it's amusing to kind of hear people and read what people write. And I agree with you, Daniel. Some objectivists are just out of their minds with regards to their treatment of Scalia. I mean, what he means to me, and particularly in terms of what I would consider my legal and constitutional philosophy, is that the morality of a law, in other words, how you feel about a law or about a bill or a piece of legislation, is separate from whether or not it's constitutional. If a bill follows the procedures as is outlined in the Constitution, but I'm talking both the federal Constitution, the state Constitution, if it passes in accordance with law, it's not unconstitutional. Now, something like Proposition 8, for example, that's a perfect example. I hate that bill. I disagree with it. I was so happy when it got repealed. I think it was terrible. But that's very different from saying it's unconstitutional when it passed the constitutional muster. I think that's one of the big lessons that I learned from Scalia, that there is a distinction. You don't have to like whatever law or bill is being passed, but that's a separate argument from whether or not it is a constitutionally done or a constitutional bill.
This is a great point, Elliot. And the reason I said, sounds familiar, is because this is basically just my reading comprehension argument. First, you find out what the thing says. Then you think about what you feel about it. First you figure out what the law says and if it's constitutional, then you have your opinion on it. It's no different from how people view movies incorrectly. That's right, I'm the Justice Scalia of film review. Analysis.
You've got the Italian down.
It's not a fucking coincidence, all right, buddy?
You've got the wit down. So, Justice Scalia, my goodness, what a loss for the country. The guy will be missed. I had the pleasure to meet him on several occasions, and he was always remarkably cordial to me and remarkably friendly with the Federalist Society. And he was the first faculty advisor for the Federalist Society on law campus at the University of Chicago and really helped them grow into a national organization. So I'm thankful to him for that. But there is other news this week, and there are other things to discuss, and we can't wallow in our sadness when we could be wallowing in Bernie Sanders' sadness. Yes, Bernie Sanders, who gave a crushing defeat to Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire this week, won by 20%, will likely end up with fewer delegates than Clinton. Wah, wah. Because of the way the Democratic Party works, they basically have delegates who are pledged to whoever wins the majority of the vote, but then they also have super delegates. These are delegates who can do whatever the fuck they want. They can vote for Bernie. They can vote for Clinton. They can say, I'm voting for Clinton and vote for Bernie, or vice versa, up until the moment they actually have to vote at the convention. And because so many superdelegates favor Clinton, Bernie is going to leave the state with 13 delegates and Clinton with 15, even though she lost by 20%.
Do these delegates live in New Hampshire?
I think they do, yes. Yes.
This whole thing's just bizarre. It's bizarre because New Hampshire's like where all the freedom people go, right? Pork fest or whatever the fuck that thing's called.
Uh-huh. Those people voted for Donald Trump, mind you, but go ahead.
Yeah. That's why the whole thing's bizarre. What's that thing called? Porcupine Fest? What's it called?
Pork Fest.
Yeah, it's the free state. It's Pork Fest, what Elliot said, but the whole thing is like the Free State Project.
Right. If enough of us move here, we'll create a free state, but somehow we'll vote for Bernie Sanders in the primary. Like,
and Donald Trump.
Yeah, and Donald Trump. Like, it doesn't make sense. And then the delegates are so, the super delegates are so disconnected that they don't even want to do the same thing that the people want to do. Like, did they just prove that freedom is anarchy by moving to New Hampshire? Is that what they proved?
The big problem with New Hampshire is that, unfortunately, a lot of the New Yorkers and a lot of the Bostonians who are far left, they moved to states like New Hampshire where there's no sales tax, where there's no – there. I mean, the economy was doing really well, and there were very few – there was very little government intervention, you know, for
– You gotta, when you live in New England, when you grow up in New England, you got to go somewhere to get your fireworks, all right?
So people started moving to New Hampshire, and they try to make it as crappy as a lot of other places in New England.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Someone has to put the man in the mountain back together when he falls apart, all right?
Wow. It comes out now.
Wow.
yeah, so the hilarity of this is it's the irony is so dripping that you don't need to point it out, except that that's what we do. We point out the humor and everything so that it's no longer funny. One, this is the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. Really? Really? Really, Democrats? This is how you're going to do things? I mean, in fact, Clinton has 394 delegates already, and Bernie Sanders only has 42. But because these are all superdelegates who have said, oh, I'm voting for Clinton no matter what. Fuck you. Mm-hmm. So Bernie is already starting out in a hole. And then two, to add insult to injury for the Feel the Burn folks, doesn't feel good, does it, Burn, to work hard for something and then have that thing redistributed to people who didn't earn it?
Oh, mm-hmm. Burn.
Yeah, take that, Ben and Jerry's and your fucking ice cream and your fucking senator. God damn.
That's what Bernie did that night. He just went home and he ate all the ice cream. He's like, at least I have an ice cream named after me.
Get me a bigger spoon. I need to redistribute this chocolate. Speaking of socialism, Chicago. Well, that's not really what the story is about, but not at all. No, this comes to us from listener Michael Jones out of Chicago. Thank you, Michael. An alderman.
Please contribute to the podcast more, listeners.
An alderman has moved to outlaw taxes on women's hygiene products, calling them sexist. That would be Alderman Ed Burke.
Wait.
Alderman...
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
What's sexist? The taxes or the products?
Oh, we'll get that.
Because the products are technically sexist, but that's a good thing.
It's what we call suspense.
By the way, it's Alderman, as in A-L-D-E-R-M-Y-N.
Okay. Yes, thank you, Elliot, for that very important feminist clarification.
I thought Alderman was someone's last name, so.
This feminist moment brought to you by the Midside. Leslie Hairston and Ed Burke are trying to introduce a basically outlaw city sales tax on sanitary pads and tampons. Burke said, this is outrageous. Yes, these products are a necessity for women, not some luxury, which are classified now as grooming and hygiene products, subject to city, state, and regional taxes. Chicago needs to lead the way in eliminating this unfair tax. Hairston labeled the tax discriminatory. It's the only product women are solely taxed on, she said. Removing the tax would help to make these products more affordable to women, especially poor women.
Aren't men solely taxed? Aren't women
on
not taxed on anything because men pay for everything for them?
Oh, I see what you did there. It's burning. Yeah, I feel the burn. It's funny. Are there things that men are solely taxed on?
Yeah, everything.
I mean, how about condoms?
How about property rights?
How about porn? I mean, we're talking here at least a substantial amount of money.
I'm not
going to
name a
buying
bunch of
porn,
stuff,
right?
Because, like I said, everything.
Because everything. But it's just look. If it's going to eliminate a tax, I'm generally fine with it. The problem is these sorts of arguments are going to be used to have things like subsidies, and then, well, you can't charge for these things because they're a necessity, so we have to give sanitary pads and tampons to women for free, and who's going to pay for that? The taxpayer, because you should, because it's your social responsibility.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask, right? So is that why they don't tax food? Because it's a necessity?
Yeah.
So they don't tax things that are a necessity?
Basically.
So
yeah.
I get addicted to cigarettes. Shouldn't they stop taxing me on cigarettes because now I need it?
Doesn't quite work the same way. You didn't have to start smoking.
I didn't know. I didn't have to, but I did.
These women did have to start menstruating.
That's the
past. Like they had a choice here.
What do you mean they have a choice? Just
cork it up, women.
Yeah, get a hysterectomy or some shit. How does that work? There's got to be some way to stop it.
I love that's your sophisticated argument. You don't have to menstruate. You get a hysterectomy. Jesus.
No, my sophisticated argument is seriously, you can't judge on the past. If someone's addicted to cigarettes, who are you to judge? I mean, we're using the social justice logic. Who are you to judge that? Maybe they were in prison, and that's why they got addicted. Maybe they were abused by their dad, and their dad made them smoke and drink, and that's why they're addicted. Like, who are you to judge that?
Yeah, I guess. Gay guy, any follow-up on the sanitary pad discussion?
I didn't say I was done.
Oh.
But go ahead, Elliot.
Yeah, I no.
He doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's like, he doesn't trust anything that bleeds for 5 days and doesn't die.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Garrison.
Yeah.
This is not a subject matter I like to discuss. It's just like...
Nobody likes to discuss it.
It's when I watched that YouTube video explaining what a hymen actually was.
And he sent it to us and he was like, you guys should care about this. And I was like, why? Is this me? Is it inside of me? Am I dealing with women who don't have hymen or who have them? I don't care.
Most women lose them riding their bikes when they're younger, so it doesn't particularly matter.
But, no, but that video was actually kind of interesting, though, because I grew up thinking the same exact thing. Like, hey, a hymen, you rupture it, hey, you're not a virgin. Actually, no, you might still have a hymen and not be a virgin. It's interesting. All right. Anyway, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
All this hot hymen talk.
Wait. No, I have another question. Who defines what a necessity is? What if I need something psychologically?
Society defines it.
What if my action figures are a psychological necessity to cure my loneliness?
My Stephen Amell action figures are certainly a necessity.
Yes. Remember last week when we were talking about not giving ideas to Democratic lawmakers? See, the opposite of what we're doing here. They're writing furiously, necessity must be paid for. Action figures, cats, action figures, cats.
Internet. I mean, they could have got those ideas from the internet, so.
Yeah, well. You know what else you can get from the internet? Horrible ideas about India, apparently. At least if you're on Facebook. Just kidding. Mark Andreessen. Anyone know this guy? I knew about him before this. That makes me a little bit of a nerd. But Mark Andreessen is a venture capitalist and a board member of Facebook. And he's also very prolific on the Twitters. He got in trouble this week on the Twitters because he apparently, quote unquote, defended colonialism. Yes. We're still talking about colonialism in 2016. In defense of, so basically the backstory of this is Facebook is trying to offer something in India called Facebook's Free Basics, which is an initiative that sets up internet access to really poor people, but limits, basically it gives them free data on tablets or their phones, but limits what is free. So you can visit Facebook, you can visit some search engines, you can visit certain websites, but if you go to other websites, namely bad websites or porn or whatever, you get charged for that data. It's not free. That's why it's called Free Basics. But Indian regulators struck down this law because they said it was basically illegal because it shaped the internet user's experience by providing pre-access only to certain services. And that's apparently a horrible, bad thing. And why should poor Indian people have internet access only to certain things. Anyway, so Andreessen took to the Twitters and argued that Indians were being short-sighted with the ban. And here's the very important part of this story, which only got reported in the New York Times. I literally haven't found it in any other news source. Thank you, New York Times. Quote, when another Twitter user compared Facebook's efforts to a colonialist approach, Andreessen wrote back, quote, anti-colonialism has been economically catastrophic for the Indian people for decades. Why stop now? And of course, people lost their shit because they thought he was promoting colonialism. Does anyone see a problem with this other than the obvious? This is idiotic.
Well, why don't you define colonialism for anybody listening that maybe doesn't understand it?
Define colonialism in general?
Yeah, like what exactly is it and how does it apply here?
Okay, well, colonialism is basically the practice of building colonies in other countries. So Britain would be the greatest example of this, where they went to India. They said, you're now ours because we put a flag here. And you are now our colony and you're under British control, even though India was basically its own autonomous area. Maybe it wasn't all as together as Britain, but they had their own thing going on, their own culture. Colonialism has been sort of, batted back and forth as good or bad. You make an argument that colonialism brought wealth and technology and stability and infrastructure to India, but at the same time, it did subjugate its people to British rule, to rule outside of their own, and they eventually rebelled against that. Very famously, you know, Gandhi, oh, I'm not going to eat, and then, you know, boom, India. The thing
you
here
forgot the
is
part
that
where
we...
Superman destroyed the world engine there.
Yes, that's true. I purposely left that out for brevity's sake. The thing here is that colonialism is used in the modern academic sense as basically exporting culture to countries and destroying, quote unquote, destroying cultures.
Right. As if people adopting Western culture subjugates their culture to ours, as if people don't have a choice when we export, right? Like when we send American films over to India, like we're colonizing them because they choose to watch them over Bollywood. And I'm not saying they do. I don't know what the statistics are on that. My point is just, they act as if people don't have a choice because we're forcing them to accept our culture, when in reality they do have a choice. And they can say, hey, I like this better. That's not colonialism. That's, I don't even know how to describe that because it's just life.
That's the free exchange of ideas. Yeah. That is what human beings do. But, and then colonialism is this whole social justice-y thought that is taught in schools. What is that called? Critical theory? Basically where you can take a quote unquote colonialist lens in the same way you can take a feminist lens or a queer studies lens to life, literature, etc. And you can say, how is this, whatever I'm doing, a colonialist approach or a feminist approach or a queer approach, etc., etc., etc. So that's colonialism. Under any rational definition, what Facebook is doing is nowhere near colonialism. But I don't even think that's the thing that's offensive to me about this story and how it was reported. What's offensive to me is it's not like Mark Andreessen out of the blue was talking about how bad anti-colonialism has been for India. He said it specifically in response to someone who said Facebook's efforts were colonialist. And from the context, it's very clear that he's just using their terminology and throwing it back in their face, saying, well, quote, anti-colonialism has been economically catastrophic for the Indian people for decades. Why stop now? Basically saying, if what you're calling us colonialists, then your anti-colonialist stuff has fucking sucked. I don't think he really believes that what Facebook is doing is colonialist. That's retarded. And the guy is not dumb.
Wasn't Facebook being more colonialist when they bought Instagram?
I guess definitionally, marginally more colonialist than they bought Instagram. Though I wouldn't even define that as colonialism. It's not like there was Instagram Island and Facebook brought their frigate over and planted a flag in it and said, you are now ours.
Isn't that what happened? That's what I thought happened.
Instagram Island.
We want your selfies. All you half-naked girls, you now belong to us.
Population of Instagram Island must be wildly, wildly hot. That's all I have to say.
Isn't Instagram Island the island of Lesbos?
Zing. Zing. So that's to reiterate, the point about this entire thing to me is that we can't report anything anymore. We can't give context for a story. We can't possibly set up what previously happened, what happened, and the fallout. We have to pick out the middle part, and then run with it based on whatever context we want, whatever fucking agenda we have. That's what we have to do. It's ridiculous. And at least the New York Times, the old gray lady here, all the news that's fit to print, put in one sentence about the context, which is more than any other news site.
Wait, the old that, gray lady isn't Margaret Thatcher?
No, she's the old dead lady.
Oh.
She's past gray at this point. By the way, Facebook also denounced the comments. Mark Zuckerberg posted, it's deeply upsetting. It doesn't represent the way Facebook thinks. Fuck you, Mark Zuckerberg.
Mark Zuckerberg, go give Facebook money to Kanye West, who's supposedly in debt.
Yeah.
You have no idea what I'm talking about.
I don't keep up with my Kanye West news.
Nobody does.
Maybe that's why he's in debt.
Oh. Maybe it's because he won't release his fucking album. Maybe that's why he's in debt.
He should take up Martin Shkreli on his offer. Didn't Shkreli offer to buy his album for $10 million?
Dude, I think he upped it to 15.
If he didn't release it to anyone else in the whole world.
Yeah, now he's
like
releasing
he did
it on some app or something.
The Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, that's all I got in the news. I'm done. I've talked so much.
Well, while we're talking about looking at things through lenses, let's find out what happens when we look at movies through a Ryan Reynolds lens in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. We've been talking about its marketing campaign for weeks, but the movie was finally released, and I required everyone to go and see it. So why doesn't everyone, and we can start with, maybe we'll start with Elliot, and then we'll go to Daniel, and then we'll go to me. Why doesn't everyone right now give their review/reaction to Deadpool, with the understanding that you're going to say what your understanding of the movie is first before you say your emotions about it?
Yeah, why don't you, before we do that, give the 2 or 3 sentence just plot summary of the film? Spoiler alert!
There was a plot to Deadpool?
Kind of. I mean, things happened in a sequence.
So the plot of Deadpool is essentially, this guy he doesn't wash out of the military. He was part of an elite squad in the military where he killed a lot of people and he had a fucked up childhood. So he's kind of messed up in the head. So he becomes a contract. I don't want to say killer because he doesn't just necessarily kill people, but he becomes a contract sort of hitman killer type where he, you know, does some good, does some bad. He meets a woman who's equally fucked up. Has a fucked up life, they fall in love, they're going to get married, and he finds out he has cancer everywhere. So the only way to be cured of cancer is to go to this mysterious organization, which is the Weapon X organization, the same people that gave Wolverine his claws by binding indestructible metal to Wolverine's bones. And what this organization does is it unlocks mutant powers. It takes people who are the dregs of society, and they're on their way out, but they, you know, they're talented in the way of the main character Wade Wilson is, and they unlock their mutation. So due to Wade Wilson being a smart ass as his way of coping with all his pain in life, not only does he have his mutation unlocked, which is he can basically never die. It's his healing factor is so strong that anything you do to him, he's fine. But as he's getting his mutation unlocked, he also gets tortured by the guy who's running, the doctor who's running this Weapon X Institute.
Francis, otherwise known as Ajax.
Yeah, which is a recurring gag throughout it. What's my name? Which I thought was hilarious, but anyway. So what happens is Francis leaves Wade Wilson for dead, which, you know, you figure you can't fucking kill him. You think he's going to die somehow. He leaves him for dead when the whole Institute blows up. But he doesn't die because he can't fucking die. And Wade Wilson gets free. He names himself Deadpool. And he sees he's been disfigured by this process. And he thinks Francis can fix him. So he goes and he tries to find Francis. And then Francis kidnaps his girl, who you know, he's abandoned, and or Wade Wilson won't go back to because he abandoned her to go get his treatments. And also now that he's ugly, he thinks the hot girl that works at the strip club won't love him anymore. Did he never see Shrek? I mean, did he not see Shrek? I mean, come on. He references everything, but he apparently never saw Shrek. And eventually it ends in a giant superhero fight where he saves the girl and kills the bad guy. The end. But you can't summarize, like, you can't summarize the plot and understand Deadpool. The point those of are, Deadpool is the character of Deadpool.
Those are Faulknerian sentences, by the way.
Those are what?
Faulknerian sentences.
Because they never ended?
Yes. I just said give a 2-sentence summary. You gave like a 400-word essay on the... Anyway, okay, moving on. Elliot?
All right, so I have to say what I think the movie is about and then give my opinion on
it? No, I just said what the movie's about. But you can say what you think the like your impressions of the character, that kind of stuff. Because the movie's really about the character. Let's be serious. Yeah. It's not about the fucking plot.
Yeah, it's almost a portrait more than a story, I would say. It's more a portrait of somebody. I mean, I thought it was funny, and I didn't feel cheated out of my money, like I said in our message. I enjoyed it. I laughed, you know, and I liked a lot of the jokes, especially that throwaway line about Patrick Stewart, you know, where like, let's go take him, we're going to take you to see the professor. And then he goes, which one, Stewart? What timeline are we in? I don't know.
He said it's Stewart or McAvoy. And then Stewart, he was like, these which timelines one? Are confusing.
I mean, so I mean, it is funny. I don't need to see it again. Personally, maybe I will, but I don't think I need to. And, I like my heroes with a little bit more goodwill, you know, and he's not quite a hero. He's still firmly in that anti-hero camp in my book. So it's not as funny as it was. It's not exactly, the inspirational film that I would like to see in a superhero story.
And what is your rating of the film?
Oh God, what is our damn rating system again?
You don't have to do an audio rating. Just give whatever the fuck rating. This is Deadpool. Just rate it whatever the fuck you want.
Alright, fine. So on a scale of like 1 to 5, I would give it like a 3. Maybe a 3.5.
You couldn't think of like some witty reference to say as a rating instead, because this is Deadpool. You had to actually give it like a 1 through 5.
That's the best kind of rating for this movie, isn't it?
On a scale between Waiting and Green Lantern.
I'm assuming Waiting is the good side, right?
I love Waiting.
Okay.
I don't know. To be honest with you, I like Green Lantern. I don't know.
I'm waiting.
I give it. It's like The Proposal. Which is squarely in the middle.
No, the worst Ryan Reynolds movie is Ryan Reynolds in a box under the ground for an hour and a half where he gets buried alive in Iraq. I watched that and I was like, this sounds like it could be unique. It sounds like it's Ryan Reynolds in a box for 90 minutes. And then I was like, this is Ryan Reynolds in a box for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I never saw that one. So no. It's not bad. It's not a bad movie. I want to be clear about that. I mean, it's fun. It's a really good date movie. There are a lot of people on dates when I went, you know, until in preparation for Valentine's Day. But it's not a movie I need to see again. And I you know, the trailers ahead of it, that Hardcore Henry, whatever, which was, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll get to that nonsense momentarily.
and that horrible perch that I've already ranted about.
Yeah. what part did you think made it a good date movie? The multiple beheadings or the part where he gets fucked in the ass by a dildo?
It's called pegging, Daniel.
It has a name?
I don't know. James told me. I saw the movie with James, and he was like, that's called pegging. And I was like, okay.
It's called pegging.
Hashtag don't judge.
The thing, what I really like, though, is that you do like the girl, which is one of my big pet peeves when you see these kind of movies. You know, like, you really don't get a chance to like the girl that the superhero falls in love with. And here, I think you do like her. I think she's a really well-developed character. And I try to overlook the fact that she was on Firefly.
I love her.
That is a bad thing. I mean, I try to overlook that I'm used to seeing her in this one role, and now I have to see her in this other role.
Yeah, but that was part of why she was in this role, because I mean, Deadpool is adjacent to Malcolm Reynolds. You can see how you can get from Mal to Deadpool.
Yeah, Malcolm Reynolds, Ryan Reynolds. Yeah, it's possible. Sure.
Good Deadpool answer.
Yeah.
I thought the best rating, if you would have said there, is Deadpool falls somewhere, is between Waiting and Green Lantern. I think it's somewhere around Deadpool. Yeah.
That would have been a very Deadpool answer, yeah, yes.
Very, very somewhere around there, Deadpool. Yeah, I had a similar reaction to Elliot's in the sense that I enjoyed myself. I had a good time at the movie. I laughed. I cried. Didn't cry. I thought the opening credits were funny, and I sort of, they set the tone really well for the movie. Yeah. And I understood what I was getting into. Fiza, my fiance who went with me, had no idea what the fuck she was getting into and was wildly confused at some point, like why he was talking to the camera. But she laughed. She liked it. She thought it was funny. Here's my thing about it. And I understand that it's more of a character study than it is an in-depth film. But if that's the case still, the plot-ish thing that went on, all of the fucking plot would have vanished into thin air if he had just had the balls to talk to her after he got mutilated, after he got tortured and turned into an ugly, hideous monster. But he brought everything after that point, he brought onto himself. Now, the problem I had with it is not that that was the case, but that they tried to set it up as a man-v-man movie where he had to go find Ajax, and Ajax was the villain and the bad guy, when it should have been a man-versus-himself movie. And I just don't think they set that up properly. And it bothered me the entire time because I kept going, just fucking talk to her. Just go say hello. She's a smartass like you. It's going to be perfectly fine. She's going to have some sort of funny, bitchy response to why you left, and then she's going to be like, oh, all right, well, fuck you anyway. And that's exactly what happened at the end.
At the very, yep, that's exactly what happens.
She's like, it's going to take a bit of adjustment, and then I'm going to have to slap you or kick you in the nuts or whatever, but then let's go back and screw. Did he not know her well enough to know that that was going to be her exact response? Because I did after 5 minutes of watching her on screen, which just so fucking bothered me the entire movie. I just kept sitting there going, just go back to her. Just go back. Just go back and say hi. Just go say hi. Just go back to her.
I agree that it was very frustrating with that, but there's two things about that I want to say that I think makes it work. One, I think that's what makes the movie work with its audience. And what I mean by that is the audience for comic books and comic book movies, you know, but this one has crossed over to the mainstream, and comic movies are mainstream, but generally the audience for comic books are people who are not very physically, I can't think of the word. They're not very physically comfortable with themselves. And they don't have a lot of, you know, self-confidence when it comes to their physicality, but they have confidence when it comes to their abilities. So when you look at someone like Ryan Reynolds and then he becomes Deadpool, he goes from being the pretty boy to, you know, I guess having a wrinkly face makes you super ugly, because that's really what it was. I mean, he wasn't that horribly disfigured. But the point is, I think that that rings true with the audience, having that self-esteem issue, having that inability to approach. I mean, I can say that for myself, I identified with that. It's like, there's no rational reason you shouldn't be able to go up to the girl and say what you feel and say what you think, but you just don't do it.
I buy that if it was like, if it was about Deadpool getting into the dating world. The problem is, they set up Deadpool, or Wade Wilson, Ryan Reynolds, whatever, as being the quintessential perfect fucking match with this girl. Like, they couldn't have been better together if it had been written in a movie about a guy who got disfigured. Oh, wait. But
that was
point,
the point.
But he acted like a complete and total bitch after it. Just like, oh, she'll never love me because I got dimples on my face.
Well,
and also, no one in that fucking world has heard of a plastic surgeon. Really? No one?
Yeah, there's got to be an X-Men whose power is plastic surgery.
No, I mean, but it demeans her, too. Like, his reaction, you know, she's introduced in such a great way. She's such a strong character, on a well-developed character, well-written. And I think that it cheapens her and demeans her when he reacts that way.
Yeah.
Well, I think it says more about himself because he relied on his look so much. The other thing I want to say about where I think the mistranslation of this might have been is in the comic book, he goes crazy when he's tortured and when he becomes Deadpool, when he gets his powers. And that's why he breaks the fourth wall. And they decided not to do that in the movie, obviously, because I think that would have been too much for the audience to accept if they actually made him crazy. They just made it as part of his character. So I think maybe what you're responding to works more in the comics. I don't know. Like I said, I don't read comics. But I think it might work more in the comics, and they took that from the comics. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes sense. It probably does work better in the comics. This is one of the comics that I never read as a kid. Probably would have traumatized me. But it just didn't make sense in the context of the film, and it bothered me the entire time. It took me out of jokes because of it. So maybe I'm abnormal in that because the movie was wildly successful and people loved it. So that's maybe a personal bias, but nonetheless, I think people should see it. It's entertaining. Please know that it is absolutely unequivocally not a family film. There were very young children in the audience and the parents were taking them out in the middle of the screening because it is not a family film. It's rated R. That means something still today. So anyway.
So I give it
like, guava. Like, it's a fruit that you're like sometimes in the mood for and it's good, but you couldn't eat guava every day. That'd be like, holy shit, that's way too much guava.
Fair enough.
But also, it's got a limited use. Like, you can't make, you know, a guavatini or it's like, you're not gonna fucking hand squeeze guava juice. That's way too much work. So, guava.
Fair enough. I think you guys will be able to predict my reaction to this movie.
You fucking liked it.
I didn't like it. I love it. I didn't stop laughing from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie. Actually, that's not true. I actually thought there were two parts that were quite dramatic and actually really got me. And I don't mean like understood me. I mean like they really got me emotionally. They gave me the feels. The scene where he fought the bad guy in the institute, and it was very dark when he was being tortured and when they were fighting and everything. I thought that was a huge thematic break. And I also thought the love story between the two was very touching. That's why I thought it was surprising you said that, Daniel, that there were dates there. Maybe you said that you were surprised there were dates there. For me, I wasn't. I thought the love story was very touching, and I thought they had a romance that felt very real and felt very true to me. It's not very often in movies that when I see a love story, I actually think it's real and it's realistic, but this one, it rang true to me.
You naturalistic prick.
Naturalistic?
I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
I'm just kidding.
You said the word real, so I was just toying with you.
God fucking damn it, dude. You're more annoying than Francis was. I think the thing that you guys have kind of glossed over is the humor, and I think it's very important that this movie is, at the same time, it's a superhero movie, it's also making fun of superhero movies.
I got that, yeah.
Well, you just didn't really make it explicit in your review, and I want to say that because I think that's the biggest defense, because yeah, there are problems with this movie. As Daniel pointed out, like, if he had just fucking talked to the girl, she never would have been kidnapped, although he still would have gone after Francis. So maybe they could have done that where he, you know, talked to her, got her, and then he killed Francis. And then they already had him kill Francis and then realized, oh, he can't cure me. I guess I have to live up to this anyway and just accept it. So they could have gone about that a different way, certainly. And that probably would have been the way to write out of it. But the other thing that I'm surprised you guys didn't mention that's a problem is they don't really establish setting at all. Like, why the fuck are they fighting on a helicarrier at the end? The bad guys are like, we kidnapped the girl. Let's just bring her to a helicarrier. And for me, I kind of just accepted that stuff. I was like, oh, that's superhero movies. They're doing a superhero movie thing.
Yeah, I just sort of accepted it as whatever at that point because I realized we weren't going to get a real plot. So it didn't matter.
And hopefully, when they have Cable in the second one, it'll get even more absurd and make even less sense because it'll be with time travel.
Oh, God. Deadpool and time travel?
Yes.
Justin's already coming in his pants.
I am right now. I have such a huge...
Okay.
Anyway, so I would rate this movie on a scale of Star Trek the Original Series to Voyager, the later episodes of The Next Generation. Pretty damn good.
Wait, you think Voyager is the best?
No, I was just doing it really, well, it's an Enterprise, so release order, excuse me.
Oh, okay.
No, the best is Deep Space, that's what I was just gonna say, man.
I was wildly confused.
As most people were when they were watching Voyager. Except when Brian Fuller wrote it.
Foreshadowing. Oh.
No, so I would say it's the later episodes of TNG. Pretty good, but not as good as Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited for the potential of what it means for the franchise going forward. So let's address some other stuff real quick before we go into the big news. First, a friend of Daniel's is in a new pop punk band that sounds pretty good, so I want to tell you guys to check them out. They're called Acadia. They're out of Maine, of all places, and they just did a song with a pop punk stalwart. Maddie Arsenal did some backup vocals for them on their song called Radiant. I believe we both shared it on our personal accounts, so check it out.
It's good. We'll share it on the Midside page. It's very entertaining. I liked it a lot. I thoroughly enjoyed the singing and the melody and the harmony and the drumming. My friend Kurt on the drums.
So definitely check it out. Definitely support them. They're new. This is their big, you know, release debut. So we want to support them and get the momentum going forward.
And now that they're going to get the Midside bump, it's basically from here to the Tonight Show. So yeah. You're welcome.
Now they'll have more than me when they go to play Chain Reaction.
Yeah. I don't know what that means, but yeah.
Also, the final trailer for Batman vs. Superman was released. Did you guys check it out?
I did.
What'd you think?
Absolutely. Elliot, what'd you think?
I'm excited for it. I was actually surprised going back to Deadpool that I didn't see a trailer for it when I went, because I was actually really looking forward to seeing it. So it looks like it's going to be, I don't know, like, just awesome. It's going to deal with really awesome ideas. And that's like, what the hell was that?
Sorry, I kicked something by accident. Nothing to see here, people. Move along.
It's the Deadpool edition. It's okay.
Deadpool edition. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just, I'm excited for it. I just want to see complex ideas and fascinating themes, and I want them to be done in Zack Snyder style. So I'm just excited already.
Yeah, I liked the trailer a lot. It was different from the others because I think it's their last trailer, so it's more of a typical trailer in many ways, if the Zack Snyder thing could be a typical trailer, because I think they're going for the mass audience appeal here. But even in its typicality, I was really excited about the way it was handled. The dynamic was set up properly. I thought they hit on the central conflict. And then the ending quote, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something to the effect of, like, there is no such thing as innocent power.
Yeah, the biggest lie is that power can be innocent.
Do you want to know the greatest lie in America, Senator? It's that power can be innocent.
There you go. There you go.
I have the movie memorized already. I found a script.
Wow. So, I know that's an awesome way to end that trailer, and I cannot wait for how that plays out in the film. So I'm thoroughly excited, as all of you should be.
Yeah, I'm hoping this movie does even better than Deadpool, obviously. I really liked the trailer because I liked the way, I think it showed us the narrative of the movie. We entered this movie through the eyes of Bruce Wayne, through the eyes of Batman, the human character.
Yeah.
And then we saw, you know, Superman, then we saw who was engineering the whole thing, Lex Luthor, and then we ended with exactly what you said, that this is really a meditation about how do we use our power. We each have different power, right? Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, they all have different powers. How do we use those? Because they're not innocent. And basically, they're going to create the Justice League to be checks and balances for each other.
The Justice League. Yeah. I'm excited. Here's my one caveat, is that no movie in the history of movies, except for The Dark Knight, has lived up to my expectations. Meaning, I'm perfectly fine going into a movie with no expectations or low expectations and being wowed, but a movie that is this hyped or I'm this excited about has never lived up to it. So.
Well, we'll get into that a little bit when we do our Man of Steel podcast, but Man of Steel blew away my expectations, so.
There you go.
All right. Next story I want to talk about here is, and Daniel, maybe you can shed a little bit of light on this because it's about Apple, so I'm not sure. Like, they're saying Apple's going to do its first scripted show. What does that mean? Is Apple releasing shows through iTunes? How is that working?
Yes, I believe they're going to, release them exclusively through iTunes or in some way through Apple TV, but Apple wants to do some things that are competing with Netflix and competing with Hulu and the rise of the custom content game, because you can make a lot of dough that way. You can keep a lot of people interested in not only in your content, but in the way you deliver that content, which is what I think Apple is most interested in here. So they need to reinvigorate people around iTunes. It's becoming a burdensome, horrible monstrosity, and they need people to come back. Come back to iTunes, please! So I think this is one of the ways they're going to try to do that, and they think the their best possible way here is through Dr. Dre.
Well, he's the one who helped launch Apple Music, right?
Yes. Yes.
They've sort of thrown in with him in the Beats empire because Dre has made so much money on Beats.
Yes. By the way, Beats would only be used by Steve Jobs to physically beat Dr. Dre with them because they are such shitty products that are giant frauds.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're not endorsed by anybody, but I'm currently wearing my Bose wireless headphones, even though I have them plugged in because you can't record wirelessly, but they're fucking beautiful pieces of equipment.
Beats are shitty pieces of equipment assembled to feel heavier. They actually have weights in them so that they feel heavier, because market studies showed that people thought that heavier headphones meant higher quality headphones. So Beats didn't actually make higher quality headphones. They just physically put weights on their headphones.
But
so,
hopefully they'll take a better approach to making shows here. Because in this article that, you know, I've linked to in the outline here and in the show outline down below, it says, you know, their first scripted show will be called Vital Signs, starring and produced by Dr. Dre. And it's semi-autobiographical, with each episode focusing on a different emotion and how Dre's character deals with it. And the reason saying I have hope for this is I can see how this premise would become very romantic. It can be done in a very romantic way.
Yeah. I guess I'm not as hopeful about this one because I don't give a shit about Dr. Dre's life.
It's called Dr. Dre. His name is Dr. Dre, and it's called Vital Signs.
Two, I was fucking burned by Inside Out in this humanizing emotion bullshit, so...
Well, I don't say they think they're humanizing emotion. They're just saying how he deals with it. That's
okay,
different.
Okay, if that's what we call a joke in the business, you just roll with it.
You don't negate it. Dre. You forgot about Dre, dude.
I always forget about Dre because I don't care.
I know you're going to care about this next story. Star Wars producers
yes!
are facing criminal charges
Ooh.
Over Harrison Ford's injury.
Wait, the one with the lightsaber? Or
That was like my joke I made.
See, I built on it.
That's good. No, when, cause like something fell on him and crushed his ankle or something during filming, and apparently they're facing criminal charges in England over it.
Yes, from the English version of OSHA, who said, oh my, look at that, big wad of money you guys just made. It would be a shame if something happened to it. Oh wait, something can happen to it because we're the government. Yeah, so in addition to the taxes they're gonna pay, OSHA wants to fine them for not having safe whatever fucking conditions. Nothing can be an accident anymore, by the way. It has to be something the government has to be involved in. So,
well, can they only be fined if this is criminal charges? Is it only going to be a fine, or can they go to jail for this?
Well, I mean, it's a criminal charge when you have to go to court for a parking violation. You're not going to go to jail for it, but it is a crime. You've committed a crime. It's not a felony, and I don't think these would be felony charges. They would just be fined a ridiculous amount of money. They might have to go through workshops and training, and they might have to have a bureaucrat on set for future things to make sure that they're following British OSHA's laws.
So really what just happened was somebody who works in British OSHA wanted to be behind the scenes of the filming that began today, the day of our recording, and they released this so that they could get on set today is all that happened.
Yeah, basically. And
it's
so
like how you need an animal trainer on set if you can have animals.
Exactly. And Britain's going to get, you know, a nice chunk of cash out of this. And everyone's going to be sort of paid off. This is similar to, like, when Apple was found guilty of violating antitrust for selling books, selling ebooks cheaper than other ebooks, heaven forbid. And they had to have a regulator on staff. And the regulator wanted daily meetings with Tim Cook. And then it turned out he was just a big Apple fan. Like, go fuck yourself, regulator. What the hell?
I mean, there are worse things to use your governmental bureaucratic power for.
Nazis.
I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's not as bad as it could be. But let's move on to something that's as good as it could be.
Ooh.
News broke last week that literally reduced me to tears. I feel almost ridiculous for saying that, but the showrunner of the new Star Trek series that is going to be released exclusively on CBS's streaming service that we talked about previously is going to be none other than, I feel like there needs to be a drum hole. From it. Brian Fuller. Now, the reason this reduced me to tears is, we talk about Ryan Reynolds and we say he was born to play Deadpool, right? You watch that movie and you understand why it's making the money it did because he was born to play that role. Agree or disagree?
Agree!
When you look at Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and it was so successful, we say J.J. Abrams was born to direct that movie, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Brian Fuller was born to make this series. A lot of people might not know, but Brian Fuller got his start writing for Star Trek. He wrote a spec script. He submitted it to Voyager. They brought him on. He wrote a couple Deep Space Nine episodes. He wrote for Voyager. He was a producer on Voyager. Then he started making his own shows. If there was one person that was going to redeem Star Trek after everything that's been done to it, it's Brian Fuller.
Yes. The only question left is, who is the captain going to eat in the first episode?
Really? Really? Because every show has featured the captain eating someone?
It's a Hannibal joke, but you can go ahead.
I know.
Okay.
I more meant every Brian Fuller show has had someone eating someone.
No, yeah, I know. You botched your rebuttal. It's fine. Everyone knows it's terrible. It's okay. Move on. No, it's fine. Everyone understands that you just completely botched that rebuttal. It's fine. You can just move on. You don't have to pay more attention to the fact that you botched that rebuttal.
I'm too distracted.
Don't worry about it.
I'm too distracted. Okay?
Yes.
I got too much going on that I'm trying to handle right now and keep from out of the way. I don't even know what to say. Oh, okay.
Here's my thing. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead. You finish. You finish. Can I finish?
Well, I'm trying not to finish here. That's the problem.
Giggity.
Wow. Edging yourself or
So Brian Fuller has said before he has ideas for a series, which I can't wait to see him bring to fruition. And I think the thing I read that he said that's most heartening is he wants to bring the color back to Star Trek. And I don't mean like the races. I mean I think he's gonna move away from this, you know, need to make everything gritty and sorry Zack Snyder, desaturated in today's day and age. He'll bring Star Trek back to its more hopefulness. So that should be interesting.
That will be. So we have no other details about the show?
No. Hmm. Except it will be awesome, because it's Brian Fuller.
I suspect it will be awesome.
This is what we know. There will be a female character who has a male name. Brian Fuller does that in everything. It will deal with death somehow, because all of his shows deal with death.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Maybe Shatner will come back. He'll deal with his death. Please don't bring Shatner back. That was not a serious suggestion.
Back if he fights Nathan Fillion.
Nathan Fillion, new Star Trek captain. Oh, man. The nerds' heads would explode.
I bet it'll probably be a female captain. That would be my guess.
A female black lesbian paraplegic captain. That's my guess. Alien captain. We haven't had an alien captain yet, have we?
Nope, and you know what? I bet you that's exactly what it's going to be.
Alien captain.
Yeah.
Ha! I figured it out.
Yep.
Start the Star Trek pool now, bitches.
Yeah, we should do that. What will the next captain be? We could create like a rubric. And like, it's like picking the Super Bowl score, like pick the box.
Alien captain. How specific do we have to get? Like female alien?
Yeah, anyway, female, okay. Alien, gay, overweight, all that kind
of
stuff.
Undocumented, that sort of thing.
Exactly. So here's my thing, finally. Here's the thing. It has nothing to do with the Star Trek thing per se. I think we discussed this before, but I'm not all that excited about having to pay CBS extra money to see this.
See, I wasn't until they said Brian Fuller, and then I was like, okay, I'll just convince myself I'm paying Brian Fuller's salary. Like, so I will say my portion of this is going directly to run for. It's like when I buy Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Sometimes they give money to Clemson, and they've given like $200,000 to Clemson, and I go, well, I haven't spent $200,000 at Chick-fil-A, so my money is going directly back to my alma mater. It's the same thing here.
Yes, indeed. Exactly like that. Justin became a meme when he heard the Brian Fuller thing and was just that guy throwing dollars out the window saying, please take my money.
I was.
Just take it.
I was like, I will, you got my money.
Yes, turned into a Fry from Futurama holding a wad of dollars just going, shut up and take my money.
This is a victory because the Star Trek franchise has been left in the mud. It's not doing well right now. It's not Star Trek right now. And Brian Fuller is looking for, and I don't know if he is psychologically, but needs that career-defining show. If we're going to say Peyton Manning needed the Super Bowl and deserves it, Brian Fuller deserves his career-defining show that lasts for 10 years and he makes $1 million fucking dollars on, or $8 million on, whatever.
It's like, what is this, the 60s?
You know my point. You know, Carlton Cuse is getting what he deserves, right? He's making a lot of great shows and making a lot of money. Brian Fuller is not there yet. He's getting the accolades from a small group. But Brian Fuller deserves to be mainstream. Star Trek deserves to be back in the mainstream. This is the way for it to happen. They couldn't have done it a better way.
But do we have to pay CBS $10 a month? I mean, they're a publicly broadcast network. Come on, people.
I agree with you, but do you really believe we're going to be able to make great romanticism on the level of Brian Fuller without paying for it? Did you really think we were going to get around that?
Not paying for it, it's paying more for it. I already buy Hulu and Netflix and Amazon and iTunes content. I'm like, I don't wanna. But I will.
You just buy the season pass on iTunes.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll do that. They'll probably make it only through CBS.
CBS is really bitchy about that kind of shit. Like, yeah. Most CBS shows are not on Netflix or Hulu.
Yeah.
No, but on iTunes. Because what you're doing is essentially you're buying the series. You know, like as you're buying a DVD. So what happens is that the next day after every episode, you get, your iTunes gets updated. There's no commercials and the episode is yours to own.
They may do that, and if they do, I will strongly consider that, but I wouldn't be surprised if CBS didn't do that with this show. If they waited entirely till the season was over before they sold it digitally. So, I will keep an eye out for that, and that is a good suggestion, but I would not be surprised if they just went double birds in the air and just said, fuck you everyone else, you have to buy our CBS streaming thing to get this, because—
We'll do it because we have Brian Fuller.
It's Star Trek. Yeah. Mostly because it's Star Trek.
No.
For us, it'll be Brian Fuller. For everyone else, it'll be because it's Star Trek. Anyway.
it'll be, for everyone else, it'll be Star Trek. It'll be, and Justin, we got Brian Fuller. No! You took him!
My God, talk about micro-targeting. They could, with you. Open that wallet, buddy.
Do you want to know the sad part? I would. They'd be like, $20. Yep. $40. Yep. $50. Well, can we just stop this, please? Nope. $60. Stop! Please! Stop!
Oh, we need to personally rape you. Les Moonves needs to sodomize you on national television. Justin's already buying the lube.
Well, speaking of other things you need to buy the lube for, it's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way. First Reddit. Now this Reddit was written before the movie, so we're gonna say, just as a critique of this, what should Deadpool do for the post-credits scene? So let's just ask what you guys thought of the post-credits scene.
It was fine. It was sort of what I expected. For people who don't know, it's basically Deadpool in a robe, basically telling you to leave the theater and then giving you a little bit of insight about Deadpool 2.
Well, it's a playoff of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's like after the credits for Ferris Bueller. That's what they're riffing off of. And it's cute. Not really worth sticking around through the whole credits for, but it was cute.
Did you know that, Daniel?
I did not know that. Makes it a little better for me.
Right, because after Ferris Bueller, it's literally in that hallway, in that robe, and he says, are you still here? Go home, leave. So that's why they did that.
Very nice.
Because is there a bigger fuck you to the audience than you stay the whole time and it actually doesn't say anything in the closing post scenes? Isn't that very Deadpool to do that? For him to look at you and be like, why are you here? I'm not going to give you anything.
That's very Deadpool, yes. Absolutely. I thought it was sort of the only way they could do that. Because it has to be fourth Wally, right?
Right.
Like that's, yeah.
So I have a story about this actually, though.
Okay.
So I went and saw this, as I said earlier, with James. And between the credits, because they did the animated credits and then the full credits where they played the Salt and Pepper song, and then they did the post-credits scene. So when they're playing the Salt and Pepper song, I'm talking to James, and I'm like, we have to stay to see what the post-credits scenes are. And he says to me, is it going to have Nick Fury? So then for like the next 5 minutes, I'm trying to explain to him, no, I know Deadpool's a Marvel character, but Nick Fury is owned by Marvel Studios. This is owned by Fox. So he can't show up. Nick Fury can't show up. And James keeps saying it to me. And I'm getting frustrated. And I'm like, why are you saying that? He's like, I say that because I always say that. I say, is every post-credit scene going to have Nick Fury in it? And then in the post-credit scene, Deadpool says, what are you expecting, Nick Fury to show up in a hot leather outfit? Or Sam Jackson to show up in a hot leather outfit? Which is exactly a reference to what James said, and I just thought that was hysterical.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I don't think you could have done better than what he did, really, unless it was even more of a fuck you, which is basically you wait all the way to the end and then there's like a giant drum roll and like a curtain opens and it's just Deadpool flipping you off for 10 minutes or something.
Or like at the end of Aladdin where it goes end and then Genie shows up and he says, made you look. And then he puts it away and it says end again.
Yeah.
The Genie was very Deadpool. I just realized that. It all makes sense now.
So sad.
All right, next Reddit. What age-appropriate film scared the hell out of you when you were a little kid?
I have a news update before we answer this question.
Did Ted Cruz win in Iowa?
No, Ruth Bader Ginsburg has died. Just kidding.
Oh,
no, very, very kidding. Very kidding. And if that happens tomorrow, I'm a fucking psychic. But no. So a lot of people on Facebook have been sharing this news, Atlas Shrugged, the series coming to Netflix in 2016. Please stop it. Stop it. It is an April Fool's joke from last year. Stop sharing it. In the bottom of the article, which lays out these things, like it's being produced by Randall Wallace of Braveheart, and it's going to star Carey Mulligan from The Great Gatsby, and John Hamm is going to jump in as Hank Reardon. At the bottom, it's an official teaser announcement link, and it's a Rick Astley video. Stop sharing this.
Wait, it actually says John Hamm is Hank Reardon?
Yes.
And people are believing it?
Yes.
Like, that would be the first thing that would convince me it's fake, because that was my thing about Mad Men, was I always said Don Draper was Hank Reardon.
Yes, indeed. But people are sharing it, and they're like, oh, Netflix is a bunch of Marxists, so they're going to fuck this up. One, if Netflix picked it up, that would be the greatest single day in the history of objectivism since Ayn Rand was born, because many people would learn about Atlas Shrugged, first of all. Two, it's not going to happen. Never going to happen. Stop sharing this article now.
First of all, never. Give me about 20
years. Back to your regularly scheduled programming.
All right.
I have the quintessentially perfect answer, so.
For this next one?
I'll wait. Yeah.
All right.
The movie that scared you as a child, even though it was age appropriate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I read the question now?
You already read it.
Okay. I guess the audience can remember then. So fuck you, audience, remember.
Which movie scared you as a child even though it was age appropriate? There you go. I helped you. Again.
Elliot.
Oh gosh. You're gonna laugh at me, but I got scared at The Last Action Hero.
What?
Really?
Yeah, I am. I do kind of want to laugh.
Was it Arnold rippling muscles that scared you?
Was it when Arnold punched the car window and his hand actually got hurt and you were like, no, they can hurt Arnold?
I enjoyed it up until the serial killer with like the Reaper, like when he starts coming off the screen and goes into the theater, it scared the crap out of me. Scared the ever living hell out of me.
So you get scared when the fourth wall gets broken?
Well, it's because he comes out of the movie theater in the movie within the movie. So it's like he breaks like a fourth wall, you know, and then you worry that he might break the fifth wall. It creeps me out.
It's like 16 like walls.
The serial killer with the pickaxe just stepping out of the screen. That's funny. Was it a Reaper? I can't remember what it was, but it was creepy.
All right. You want me to go? I'll go. Justin, did you ever see the Scary Rat movie as a kid?
The Secret of Nim?
Hold on. Yes! Thank you. The Secret of fucking Nim. I was horrified by this movie. Why this is a children's movie, I do not know. They are torturing animals in this movie and like injecting them with needles in the stomach. And they're like evil. They want to gnaw your face off.
Well, it's
horrifying.
Because they become super soldiers. They're the first Captain Americas.
But, nonetheless, it's insane. You let children watch this shit.
It was a children's book, is why it was a children's movie.
Yeah, well, it's reminiscent of the fucking German fairy tales that Disney batted down for us because they were about cutting people's heels off and toes off so their blood could fill the shoes of Cinderella and whatnot.
Yeah.
All right. Well, no. I have a similar one that was similarly scary that shouldn't have been. The Neverending Story.
Oh,
the wolf.
Were you afraid of the oh yeah.
That fucking wolf is terrifying, okay? I had nightmares about it.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. That is kind of terrifying.
All right. So
why do we do this to our children?
I don't know. It toughens them up. All right. Let's end on that happy note right there and let's put a bow on this episode. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
Other than The Secret of Nim was a part of the movie, because I didn't know that. I thought The Secret of Nim was just some shitty movie about rats. Apparently it was a popular book. No, I mean, I learned that Deadpool had no plot, really, where I was looking for a plot, and it was more character study.
Yes.
And that the whole Deadpool crazy thing, it probably would have worked much better if they went that way. But, you know, can't be everywhere. Can't be everywhere. Elliot?
I learned that Justin didn't know what pegging was. Or was it Daniel who didn't know?
I didn't know what James told me.
I did not know pegging was a thing. I did not know it had a name, a concept. People had categorized it.
You had to have known it happened, though, right?
Yeah, I know I was aware that it happened. I just didn't know it had a specific name. And its name was kind of humorous. It was kind of funny. Although it makes me think of a pirate. Being parked by a pirate.
Peg legging. That's peg legging.
Yeah, it's very different, apparently. Very different. Justin?
I learned that apparently I'm the only one who can appreciate the awesomeness of Deadpool. So, meh.
We both liked it.
We liked Deadpool.
It's fine.
Do you understand that I loved this movie?
Yes. We all know you have a man crush on Ryan Reynolds.
Is there a better man to have a man crush on than Ryan Reynolds?
Justice Scalia. Oh, no, I'm sad again.
Rob Gronkowski.
That's true, too.
Ugh.
What if Rob Gronkowski met Ryan Reynolds?
Oh, my God.
Sandwich me between the two of them.
Elliot just wants to play the penis game from Waiting with Ryan Reynolds.
Yes. Oh, God, yes.
I don't even know what that refers to, but it sounds homoerotic.
It is very homoerotic.
Well, if you like homoerotic things, you'll love our podcast. You should give us 5 stars on iTunes and call us homoerotic. That would get us a brand new audience, certainly. Yeah, go on over to iTunes, walk your fingers on over there, click the 5 stars, type in a little note, tell us your favorite thing about the podcast or your least favorite thing, then still give us 5 stars. Because that helps us move up in iTunes. We need, need to pass that stupid Night Vale show. I'm so sick of typing in Welcome to the and fucking Night Vale comes up. I don't care about that shit. Neither should you. That's right. Also follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And if you are, like some of our stellar listeners, so interested in the show that you want to give us money, there's a mechanism for that. It's called Patreon. Google Patreon, or you can go to patreon.com/themidside, and you can choose to give us just a few pennies, a few bucks, whatever you want per piece of content that we deliver to your waiting ears. Yes, we're basically inside right now. Think about that for a second.
That's a very Deadpool line.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode, and we hope you'll tell a friend, because that's also a very great way for us to expand our audience, because people like you will like us because we like you. Thanks.
Well, Daniel likes you. I just like that you like me. I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there. Remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.